With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary. For a limited time only.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Welcome into 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I am your host, Drew Kreisman, and as always, I'm excited to be talking Colorado Rockies baseball with you here on the show. And check out your boys. Look at them go. Six straight wins. Two consecutive series wins after being the last team in baseball this year to win a series. How should we feel about this? What's going on? Why is this happening? I'm going to dive into all of that. But first, I've got to tell you about our friends over at Bet Online, your number one source for all your summer sports this season for MLB, golf, NBA, NHL playoffs, and stats. They've got everything from stats, news, scores available to follow your favorite teams and get in on the action. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on that action. Bet Online, where the game starts. All right. Let's start with, why are the Colorado Rockies suddenly winning baseball games? I will say some of this is just the natural regression too, as I'm always preaching, right? Recency bias is the strongest bias in sports. I try not to go overboard with it, but when early on people are running away with these, you know, they're going to lose 120 games and this is what they're on pace for. Right, those conversations are always silly. As long as we're having fun, then fine, right? It's like if a guy has a really hot first week and you say, well, he's on pace to hit 480 this season, right? Guy's on pace to, you know, those things can be fun. He's on pace to hit 162 home runs when he hits a homer in the first game, right? But it was always the case that at some point, the Rockies were going to rattle off some wins. And I do think some of this is just a little bit of randomness. During that stretch when they were absolutely terrible in the first couple of weeks, there were a handful of games that they lost because of some really bad luck. And now there were some games in this stretch, especially, most specifically, the first game against the San Diego Padres that they absolutely deserved to lose. You walk 11 guys, you have wild pitches in there, you're giving away runs late in the game with base running mistakes and errors and all kinds of things, and you still end up not losing that ball game. That's a little bit lucky, right? But of course, that it often goes both ways. So that's one of those ones throughout the course of the year where in almost every way you probably deserve to lose, but you ended up getting the win. What a lot of people won't recognize on a bad team is there are also going to be games where they deserve to win and ended up losing. For example, the one I'll give you off the top of my head in Philadelphia when the whole thing with Kyle Freeland sliding in and getting called out, even though I thought it was pretty clear, you know, catcher's interference. And then there were several other things there. So some of it is just, yes, a recognition that despite the over-exaggerations on social media and some headlines you might read, they are indeed a Major League Baseball team with Major League Baseball players who aren't going to all slump for the entire season, right? But let's dive into some of the specifics, because me just sitting here saying, well, it's kind of random and some of these guys were eventually going to do okay, isn't the most fun analysis. And there's actually some really interesting things going on out there. Let's start with the big one, which has been Ryan McMahon at the plate. He really has played, finally, and I almost don't want to jinx him here because it feels like I've been saying for years, this guy has true all-star potential. But for me, Ryan McMahon has always shown that ability, has always been right on the cusp of being the ball player that he has been for the entirety of the 2024 season, which is an elite defender, and finally now a well above average player on offense who you can kind of build your offense around, who's been reliable and consistent, hitting .308, on basing .389, slugging .481 for an OPS of .870 and an OPS plus of .138, where he's been stuck right around that league average of 100 for the last couple of years, right? And there's been a really interesting parallel I've been watching with Ryan McMahon. And again, I don't want to jinx the young man, but there is a, and he's 29. He's not as young as he used to be. I suppose none of us are. But as I was looking at that, I was thinking about the career of Charlie Blackmon, who's my age. And, you know, I think we kind of have this memory of a guy who burst onto the scene. Those of you that really remember, he had that hot, hot, hot April. He hit like .400 for a month, his first month as a starter. But then after that, he really cooled off, not only for the rest of that season, but for a couple of years. Charlie Blackmon, and remember, he was a little bit of a later, debut. He debuted at 24, only got a handful of games in. Played 42 games at the age of 25, put up an OPS plus of 85, well below the league average. But here are his OPS plus numbers for his age 26, 27, and 28 seasons, which a lot of people, for them, that's their prime, right? 106, 103, 102. For Ryan McMahon, during those same seasons, or during those same ages, they're not exactly the same years for him, but it's close enough. McMahon debuted a little bit younger. But at age 25, 26, 27, his OPS plus numbers, 80, 98, 98. I'm sorry, I went back 1 year. I went back to the 2020 season for that 80. So it's 98, 98, 94. So just under 100, right? And then, as you all know, at age 29, which is the season Ryan McMahon is playing right now, Charlie Blackmon broke out, put up an OPS plus of 130. That was in 2016. The next season, his OPS plus was 141 at age 30. That was the year he led the league in plate appearances, runs scored, hits, triples, batting average, won the batting title, right? Had one of the best leadoff seasons of all time, drove in 104. I think it was 101 out of the leadoff spot, hit 37 homers. And that, you know, he had basically been a league average player before those two, or league average hitter before those 2 years, going into his age 29 and 30 seasons. And I've often wondered if McMahon, because of the cerebral player he is, because of the raw talent that's always been there, because of his drive to succeed, if he could have a similar rise where his peak will be much like Charlie Blackmon's from age 29 to, you know, 32 is the last time Charlie put up an OPS plus over 125. That was in the 2019 campaign when he was still, you know, a guy you can build your offense around. And I wouldn't be at all shocked if we're about to see a 4-year stretch of Ryan McMahon into his age 30 season, 32, 33, you know, seasons where he's the guy that you're building around in every capacity. And so, you know, we talked earlier in the year and I wrote earlier in the year about potential trade candidates. And when you are on a team that's still probably going to lose a lot of games and you do still have to commit to this rebuild, there's always going to be that interesting question of whether or not you should trade a player like this. Maybe it is just one hot year and he'll regress to the mean in the future and you should take advantage of it now. You know, coming into this season, people would have told you that the contract was not really movable. Now, if he's this type of player, that's a very movable contract. People would love to have that guy on their team. But I'm back to a place now where if he continues this, you look at him as exactly that type of player. You're Charlie Blackmon of the next generation that, yeah, he may even be a little bit past this prime that he is maybe coming into right now, you know, when some of these other guys are coming up and contributing more. But he's going to be, I think, a really, really key player moving forward. And it's been awesome to watch him break out this year, find the consistency, find the two-strike approach, be able to drive the ball with regularity. He seems to be coming up with the key homer, the key double. It's not just that he's hitting, you know, random homers or random doubles, that they're right in the middle of these key rallies that now are all of a sudden helping the Rockies win baseball games. And the other part of that has just been, of course, anytime you're winning baseball games, the starting pitching has been better and the bullpen isn't blowing it, right? That's just, I mean, that's literally the formula for how you win them. But specifically, Austin Gomber and Cal Quantrill have been very, very good. Now over 51 innings pitched, Cal Quantrill with his ERA plus at 126, Austin Gomber with his at 134. And I tweeted this out today just to have a little bit of fun with everybody, but I was kind of curious and looking at it that Austin Gomber and Nolan Arenado have actually been roughly equal in value since the beginning of the 2023 season in terms of WAR. Now, obviously, right before that, Nolan put up like an MVP caliber season on a team that went to the postseason, and Austin Gomber did not. But I just found that to be a little bit funny. The outside of that 1 year, you know, Nolan has struggled out there a bit in St. Louis, and the Cardinals have struggled. And when that was going the other way, of course, locally and nationally, the media, you know, they just ate it up when like Gomber would serve up a home run to Nolan. And of course, those headlines write themselves. Those stories kind of write themselves. But very quietly, since that initial super emotional reaction and that one next year after where Nolan was great and the Cardinals had lost in the first round, but whatever, right? Since then, actually, Gomber is just steadily, quietly getting better and better, putting up nice solid production for his team, getting innings and doing the job, where, you know, things have also very quietly gone the other way on the other side of that. But outside any of that, you know, and obviously we continue to have the Alaurys Montero conversation, which I don't think we'll be able to do too much of today, but it is something I want to dive back into before too long. Just in terms of these games, though, when you're getting solid outings like that, I know Cal, you know, wasn't happy with some of the walks, and neither was I. The walks are killing me, everybody. The walks from the starting pitching and the bullpen. As I've said many, many times, I'm not bothered by losses at this point in the Rockies' grand schedule, right? I recognize and expect them to lose a decent number of games, and even recognize there's probably more positives in losing more games right now than there are in winning them. But it's just hard to watch baseball games where dudes are walking three guys in an inning, walking runs in, hitting guys with the bases loaded. And that's been tough. But you also got to give them their flowers. The bullpen has been much better. Justin Lawrence has really stepped up lately. There's still moments where his command issues drive me nuts, but he's got that ERA plus back up to 99, you know, where he was sitting in the 60s for a lot of the early years. Nick Mears as well, up to a 96. We've already talked a lot about how Jalen Beeks and Victor Vodnik have been fantastic. And Tyler Kinley, while his numbers are still pretty ugly with the raw ERA of 844 and the ERA plus of 55, over his last couple of outings has looked much, much better. And so the Rockies are suddenly getting a decent little run. I'm still not super happy about the way Jake Bird is pitching. Again, he's kind of spraying the ball all over the place, and it feels like you're kind of flipping a coin when you send him out there. Every once in a while, you're getting a really nice, you know, inning pitched out of him. And then every once in a while, you're getting this kind of nightmare of you don't know where the ball is going to go. So he's still in kind of a rough spot. But at least they've got a few guys out there in the pen right now that they've been able to kind of close out these games. Side note, while I'm talking about the bullpen, and I usually don't do a ton of analysis of the other teams because I think, quite frankly, oftentimes Rockies fans are hit over the head with analysis of the other teams because people don't want to talk about the Rockies. But this, if you've wondered over the last several years without diving too deep into it, how come the San Diego Padres, with all of that talent, seem to be stuck in absolute mediocrity? You know, everybody, after they acquired a lot of these guys, coming out and saying they're the favorites in the NL West. People said this was going to be a dynasty. And, you know, why is it not working? And I think you've seen in this series a microcosm of precisely why. The Rockies, especially in that first game, were beating themselves, could not throw a strike, couldn't buy a strike. Like it was Wheel of Fortune. And in two instances, had players go up there, And twice it was Manny Machado, but there were a couple other times with this, and Manny Machado's been doing it throughout the series. And it goes to show the difference between a great player who can put up great raw numbers sort of outside of a general context, and that's just a terrible approach. That is bad mental baseball. You have got to make Justin Lawrence or whoever else who hasn't been able to buy a strike throw more than one pitch. He came in and threw two pitches and got three outs when they couldn't, like I said, buy a strike. If you just stand there for two or three pitches, there's a decent chance with the way they've been going lately, Lawrence is going to put one in the dirt and you're going to score a run on a wild pitch, or he might just walk you or hit you. But to go up and swing at the very first pitch, multiple times they would do this, where you'd see several hitters just show tremendous patience, a great approach. They'd load the bases, and then two dudes would just come up there and whack, whack, inning over. And that is such a gift to the other team. That is such a monumental momentum killer. That's an interesting phrase. A monumental momentum killer. And I think just seeing the Padres, and they did it not to as extreme an extent in the second game of the series, but watching them mentally miss the key moment. Now the Rockies have done it as well, but they're a rebuilding team, and you know there's certain things. Jordan Beck getting caught off a second base the other night, you know, that's the kind of thing that I know drives Bud Black absolutely nuts. You're in the ninth inning of a one-run game. The other team, it's been, you know, a bigger deficit for them, but they've been coming back a little bit against your bullpen that's been shaky. You've got a chance to add on, and you just get caught off a base, second and third, one out, and you get doubled up behind you. That cannot happen. It just can't. But when you're a rebuilding team, when he's a rookie that's only been in the big leagues for a couple of weeks, and you understand the moment might have got to him a bit, he forgot where he was, whatever. Again, it's a bad, bad mistake, but it's one that a team like the Rockies should be able to say, okay, that's a part of the rebuild, that's a learning moment, XYZ, even if it ends up costing you the game. But when you've got like a multiple-time all-star, a guy who's played in postseasons before, one of the best third basemen of this generation, which has had an incredible run of remarkable third basemen, and he's up there whacking at a sinker at his ankles with the bases loaded and one out with a bullpen that is spraying the ball all over the place. That's just bad baseball. So yeah, I didn't want to dive too much into, you know, the Padres, but that to me, I couldn't help but think this explains so much of why a team that is this talented has difficulty stringing together wins, because it's not always just about the overall talent. At some point in the game of baseball, you do have to have a team approach, you know, sitting around and expecting that someone's just going to hit the 3-run home run to win you the ball game can work sometimes. But you've got to be able to have a better approach than that. Real quick, a couple of other position players that have been contributing quite a bit to this stretch of wins. Brendan Rodgers getting his bat together a lot. He just seems to get off to these customary, very slow starts. He's talked about it. He's even said, you know, there's nothing he can do at this point but joke about it, that his bat doesn't wake up until after April. And that seems to be the case. But, you know, he's still only got the OPS plus up to 82. But, again, you know, when you consider where he was down in the 50s for a while, he's been quite a bit better. Speaking of somebody with an 82 OPS plus that's played way up lately is Charlie Blackmon, who's been especially clutch, right? He went through a real tough stretch there after and just before the injury. Hard to know how much that was playing a factor. And he still hasn't, you know, come out and had any of those old classic Charlie Blackmon games where he's got a ton of hits. You know, like I said, the numbers are still down a bit, batting 238, on base only 299. You know, we're obviously constantly keeping an eye on him, and is it age and he's done and this, that, or the other, or he goes on one real hot stretch and he's back up to being a league average hitter, right? But particularly in the clutch, which has destroyed the Rockies in a lot of games this year, like I was saying early on, there were several games they could have or would have won with just one key gap double with a couple of guys on base they weren't getting. Now Charlie is giving them that type of hit with a bit of consistency, and it's leading to some wins. But the most exciting one has been Ezekiel Tovar. I mean, Brenton Doyle is the most exciting one, but he's been very, very consistent. Ups and downs a little bit, but still with the 114 OPS plus, we're talking about just a massive improvement over a year ago. It's been so much fun to watch. So Doyle's been the most exciting. But for somebody who went through a little bit of a slow stretch there, and you still wonder at 22 years old, Tovar back now with the 106 OPS plus, 275 on the batting average, which is really nice to see. You like to see him making the contact. But the other really big thing for me is that Tovar is now second on the team in homers after the no-doubter that he hit last night in San Diego. 5 home runs on the season, 17 ribbies, 4 stolen bases, 8 walks. He's doing a nice job there. He is striking out a decent amount of time at 56, so you'd still like to see him bring that down a little bit more. And then obviously he's given you more Gold Glove caliber defense at shortstop. So this is the kind of second year improvement that you wanted to see on a guy who showed you a lot of promise with the bat last year, but still ended up in the 80s with that OPS plus. Well, now we're looking at a guy at 106. A lot of season left to go, but if he can maintain even right around those numbers at 22 years old, you're looking at a great step forward for Ezekiel Tovar. And quietly, Elias Diaz continues to just be very good. His 110 OPS plus, as much as I very much enjoy watching him play and everything that he brings to the team, and he's absolutely been one of their most consistent hitters, I still do think, as opposed to Ryan McMahon, where maybe I'm now pulling back and be like, don't trade him. Maybe he's a key cog for you in the future. Diaz and Jacob Stallings, who've both been fantastic, both behind the dish and at the plate, I think should be considered trade candidates, not because they aren't both super awesome, actually, because they are both quite a bit of fun, and it could be very valuable to some teams out there. And just given their contract situations and age, I don't think are a part of your long-term plans. And you've got a couple of guys on the farm system who are really exciting catchers, including the suddenly extremely hot Drew Romo on the Albuquerque Isotopes. So love watching Diaz play and enjoy it for hopefully as long as we can here. But I do hope that he can keep that up and the Rockies are smart about shopping him at the deadline. And it'd be a lot of fun to watch Elias go out and play for a postseason team in the second half. Like, nobody deserves it more than that guy who's, quite frankly, been stuck on some very bad Pittsburgh Pirates and then Colorado Rockies teams, despite being a very quietly solid catcher for several years now, that I don't think a lot of people around the league realize quite how good he's been. He's also very streaky, we know that. But, you know, it's just hard to find guys behind the dish who can be above average on defense and offense at the same time. And throughout his career, at times, Diaz has been one of those guys. So if you can keep it up through the deadline, that's really good news for your Rockies. But hey, we'll keep watching. We'll keep seeing what's going on. As much as I have often said, you know, losses really aren't a bad thing for this team. In fact, it might be better. I'm never going to get upset at them for winning or say, oh no, they're ruining the this or the that, because you do need moments where you get that validation of success. You do need those moments where, because you're getting good play out of guys like Jordan Beck, has been much better at the plate lately, right? When you're getting contributions from these guys, sometimes it's just going to lead to wins. You know, when a guy like Victor Vodnik, who very much could be a key cog of your future, and he struggled a bit last night, but he was able to get through it. Very key learning moment. Almost more, tells you more than when he's got his best stuff and he goes up there and he, you know, strikes out the side or whatever, because, you know, he sits on 99 with the fastball. If he's hitting all his spots, that's going to be tough to beat no matter what. But when he doesn't have his stuff, when he catches some bad luck, a couple of dribblers get through the infield, he threw his pitches. He should have had a rise out and kept it, you know, just the one run, but it just happened that the first baseman's covering the bag, little dribbler gets through, you know, some bad luck there to the ball in the dirt that just took a weird bounce, but he was able to fight through it. Those are the kinds of key moments that sometimes lead to good development for the future and also wins. So you take those as well. But yeah, as long as it's coming from these types of contributions, it's a whole lot of fun to watch. And yeah, I mean, look at them go. We'll keep watching and see if they keep winning. I don't expect them to, but I do think we're going to see throughout the year them play better baseball across the board as younger players are having more consistent at-bats, are having, you know, are just getting the experience that it takes to be more consistent across the board at the big league levels. Thank you all for listening into this episode of 20th and Blake here on the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. Make sure you're checking all the written content at milehighsports.com and following us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all that good stuff. YouTube, lots of good fun videos there on YouTube. So anyway, thank you all for hanging out and being absolutely awesome. You know that I will continue to be absolutely Drew Kreisman. And until next time, I will see you at the ballpark.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary. For a limited time only.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Rack up the deals on everything summer at Nordstrom Rack and get brands you love up to 60% off. Vince, Kate Spade New York, Steve Madden, Madewell, Nike, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Just in dresses, tops, shorts, sandals, sneakers, denim, luxury bags, and sunglasses. Rack up the deals today and save up to 60% on summer at your Nordstrom Rack store.
Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.